Hello, and welcome to episode 100 of the Sugar Mamas podcast. I can't believe we made it to episode 100. It is truly mind-blowing. Well, today I am back with a very special guest, Miss Joanne Robb, who, if you remember, is the host of a podcast called Sweet Talk for parents of kids with type 1 diabetes. Joanne is a psychotherapist and a diabetes coach, and, of course, and also a T1D mom herself. Joanne has three kids altogether. Two of them have type 1 diabetes. I have three kids altogether, and one of them has type 1 diabetes. And today, Joanne and I are talking about a very important topic, and one that I think is often forgotten in the diabetes space. But we're going to chat about those other kids, you know, the ones that aren't living with type 1. Those sweet, sweet siblings who are on this journey with us, whether they want to be or not. I think a lot of the things said in this episode is really going to resonate with parents out there. I think the vast majority of us have more than one kid, and it's tricky to juggle managing type 1 along with all the other parental duties and pouring so much attention into our T1D kiddos while also trying to balance our relationship with our other children. I hope you can glean some nuggets of wisdom off of our conversation. And if you like this episode, don't forget that Joanne has been a guest on my show before. She did a four-part mini-series with me where we discussed all the mental and emotional challenges that come with managing type 1 diabetes for your kid. That starts with episode 88 and goes through episode 91. So make sure you check those out as well. All right, without further ado, let's get started. You're listening to the Sugar Mamas Podcast, a show designed for moms and caregivers of type 1 diabetics. Here, you'll find a community of like-minded people who are striving daily to keep their kids safe, happy, and healthy in the ever-changing world of type 1. I'm your host and fellow T1D mom, Katie Roseborough. Enjoy! Before we get started, I need you to know that nothing you hear on the Sugar Mamas podcast should be considered medical advice. Please be safe, be smart, and always consult your physician before making changes to the way you manage type 1 diabetes. Thanks. I am back today with Joanne Robb. Today, we're going to talk about a really important topic. I think one that doesn't really get discussed a whole lot. We're going to chat about the siblings of the children who are living with type 1 diabetes. So those non-T1D siblings who, bless their hearts, a lot of times they pushed to the side while we as parents are dealing with our kiddos who are managing type 1 day in and day out. So I know, Joanne, this is a topic that's near and dear to your heart. It sounds like you've had a lot of people reach out with questions about, hey, how do I handle the siblings? I guess let's kind of go down the list of a few scenarios that might kind of come up in this area. And, you know, I would love it if you could just kind of guide us through like how parents can think about these situations, just things that we as parents of type 1 diabetics can be on the lookout for, you know, like maybe little signs and symptoms of whether or not a sibling is feeling left out. And then some ways, hopefully, that we might be able to just address these situations as they come up in as loving and as caring as a way as we possibly can. And I would love it too, like as we're going along, and I know you can't share names and details, but if you have kind of counseled somebody through a situation similar to what we bring up, like I'd love to know kind of how you guided them through it and just what was helpful for your patients that you encounter. So let's talk about the non-T1D siblings feeling left out. I can certainly say that there have been times where, you know, my own boys, just as a reminder, I have three kids. Sarah is the one with type 1 diabetes, and I have two other children. Sarah's right in the middle, and the other two are boys. So I know my boys have felt left out at times. I mean, Sarah gets to do a lot of things for diabetes. And maybe that's because I have this podcast, but you know, she gets to be a part of a lot of like type 1 activities that are going on around town. She has a whole little group of friends that have diabetes that we get together with periodically. She got to go to a diabetes camp not too long ago. And then she gets to drink a lot of juice and eat a lot of candy.
Yeah.
Yep. To correct her lows. So And I know sometimes my boys will make comments, and to me, most of them seem pretty innocent and lighthearted, but you know, oh, I want to drink some juice, or I want some Skittles, or whatever the case may be, or I wish I could go to a camp. So, you know, what have you experienced? How have you kind of counseled people through siblings that might be feeling a little left out?
So, Katie, the interesting thing to me that I want to actually start with is the way you're languaging this, because you're saying siblings who feel left out, and that's lovely. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be that. And I think it also can be more than that, right? Because I think it can be jealousy, right? Flat out, not just like, I feel like mom is paying attention to T-Wendy kid right now and I'm not getting attention, although that is a big piece of it. But I think there can be a bunch of jealousy that can come up because of everything you just mentioned, right? The camps, the sugar, the all the things. So I think, as with so many things in diabetes, we have to slice it a little thinner in the sense that how close you are to diagnosis and the age of your child, I think, affects these answers a lot. So I will say that when you're closer to diagnosis and you as parent are still in your massive learning curve, it is much harder to address, you know, you're in a crisis mode. So it's harder to address the needs of that sibling. So I kind of want to set that aside for a second. But in regular life, once you get the sense under your belt of how you're managing this, I really recommend trying to, like the situation you're talking about where the kid's like, I would like some juice or Skittles. I would say, sure. And I would hand some to them, right? Because we shouldn't, we should sort of demystify some of the process and some of the privileges that come with diabetes if we can for our kids. And yes, we might have this idea that it's not good for them to have Skittles. That's probably true. But a few Skittles is not going to hurt anybody, right? So if that's the thing that's going to even the playing field for your kid, that is that's cheap, right? All the way around. So that's one thing that I would say is that, like, how do you make things special? I have someone who her son, non-T1D, used to feel really envious that her daughter got boxes of what he saw as presents, but it was really boxes of supplies. You know, she was getting her pump and Dexcom supplies, but he felt envious because she got supplies. So, you know, maybe you just mail him something, right? So that he can feel like he gets things too. And that, you know, again, it depends on the age of your child. For a three-year-old, that's an easy solution. For a 12-year-old, you just kind of explain a little bit more what it is and validate. Again, I know you and I have talked about that before, but you go ahead and validate that it feels normal to that child, that they feel like they're not getting stuff, even though the stuff is not really fun stuff.
I do think it's worth, I think you're exactly right. You have to take the age of the non-T1D into consideration for sure. I know my kids are a little older, like my one oldest son is 12 and my other son is almost 9. So, you know, they're older. And I do also explain to them, you know, that the playing field is not always going to be level in life. I mean, there's things that you are going to get to do that your sister does not get to do. And there's things that she gets to do that you are not going to get to do. And sometimes, you know, that's just the way it is. I mean, as much as possible, we're going to hopefully, you know, you're going to be able to enjoy the same things and experiences as your siblings. But there certainly are, you know, just kind of preparing their hearts and their minds that there just are times where you're not going to get everything that, you know, your siblings are going to get. I mean, for instance, I mean, this isn't even with Sarah, but my husband's getting ready to take my oldest son on a trip with one of our neighbors and the rest of us aren't going. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard a lot of griping about that from my other two kids. And again, it's just, hey, Daddy and Nolan were invited on this amazing opportunity. You know, it's going to be so much fun for them. And I know that you're sad that you are not going, you know, but let's be excited for them. And I have no doubt that at some point in time in life, there's going to come an opportunity for you to get to participate in something really fun that, you know, your brothers won't get to do. So I do think it's worth having the conversation with those older kids of like, hey, you know, sometimes life just isn't fair. Type of thing.
Well, first of all, as always, Katie, in talking to you, I really appreciate your practical perspective on parenting. And I think that that's exactly right around how to balance that, right? My mother used to say to me, it's not all going to be equal. And I think it's just true. Like, our job as parents is to meet the need of the child in front of us. And if a child has diabetes, their needs aren't by definition very different than the other kids. And certainly our other kids might have other needs. Like, you might have a kid who loves piano, and what you do is you send them to jazz camp, and the other kids, you're not paying for jazz camp. You know, it's just different. So I think having that perspective is good and practical and just really super grounded.
I do love the idea, though, of mailing your kids. Because Sarah does, when you said that, I was like, oh man, Sarah does get so much stuff in the mail. Like, you know, we'll order her patches for her Omnipod and her Dexcom, and those are fun, and they come in the mail. And then she'll get like a little package from somebody else, diabetes related, you know. It's like, I want a Instagram giveaway the other day for a diabetes thing. And of course, I was like, well, Sarah is going to use this, clearly. So yeah, little things like that. So I should mail them a little something every now and then. I like that idea. That's really sweet.
Well, another thing that comes up is diabetes anniversaries, right? Like, a lot of families do some kind of anywhere from just a noticing to a celebration, right? For something that really warrants and is important. And I started to realize, especially because I have two kids with type 1, and I also have three children, but my middle child is, like, I'm the inverse of you. My middle child is the one without type 1. At some point, I realized I was having these lovely celebrations/ceremonies every year for my type 1 kids, but not for my non-type 1 kid who's actually gone on the journey all along, right? Like, it's been part of her process, too. And so how to honor that, you know, that she's been a real, like, they call it a type 3. I don't know if you've ever heard that, like, the people who are the accompaniers, right? The people who are the caregivers for everybody else.
Yeah.
And I feel like my non-T1D kid is by far and away an excellent type 3. You know, she can do it all. So I feel like, you know, how do I honor her and that? And so for us, for diabetes anniversaries, I've made this little ritual. And every year I give the kids a stone. And so I made a same bag for her and occasionally just give her a stone as a thank you and a noticing and a whatever, so that she feels part of the family experience.
I really love that. Yeah. We've only gone through two diversaries and we don't do anything big. Hey, listen, parents, think about the future, okay? You set that bar low from the beginning. You don't want to be throwing these major parties or anything, because then you've set the bar really high. That's my practical parenting tip for the diversity. But I do definitely not want it to go unnoticed. So I've just given something, Sarah, something very small. Doesn't even have to be diabetes related. But, and then we go out to dinner as a family, because it is a family. It's a family effort. I mean, managing this disease is for sure a family effort. And so, you know, in that way, my boys do get to participate in the, you know, the celebration, so to speak, the celebration of our strength and resilience as a family. But I do like the idea of getting, even if it's just a little card that says, you know, hey, you are part of this journey too. And I appreciate, you know, you can even, you know, XYZ, be specific with the things that you've seen them doing to help their T1D sibling along the journey as they go.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea.
Absolutely. I mean, and I want to say it's important, and this is what I very strongly recommend in particular for younger kids, but it's something we shouldn't lose sight of for older kids as well, which is that it shouldn't be all about the diabetes. So, like, once you're out of that crisis phase, if you have a child who's needing it and responsive to it, make sure you're spending time. You know, especially if they're little, I think there's that old rule of, like, or that old rule of thumb of, you know, 10 minutes a day on the floor playing trains, that even if you hate trains, if that's what your kid loves, that's what you do. And I feel like our non-T1D kids particularly need that thoughtfulness once we're out of the crisis phase. So yes, I love folding them in and helping them recognize that they're an integral part of diabetes management. But, like, how do we step out of diabetes management for a minute to recognize who they are, what they need, what their interests are? And it's the same for our T1D kids, right? If it's all about diabetes all the time, that kind of sucks for them, frankly. So, like, how do we step away from the diabetes conversation, but especially for our non-T1D kids?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think those are two great points. I mean, I know for Sarah specifically, like, I'm very protective of how much diabetes is part of our lives. I mean, obviously it's an everyday part of our lives, but, like, outside of just the day-to-day management, I don't want it to be all be about diabetes. So I'm very protective about, like, she recently got asked to do a couple things for JDRF, and we said yes to one of them, but the other ones I politely declined because I was like, we just can't do diabetes all the time. Like, like we, you know, I appreciate you thinking of us, and I'm honored to know that we came to mind when you were looking for somebody for this, but I'm just don't want her to think that the only thing is diabetes, you know? So, and then for my younger son, you know, bless his heart, how old is he? He's 8. He's about to be 9. And so when Sarah got diagnosed, he was in kindergarten and it was the pandemic. Sarah got diagnosed in 2020, the day before school started that year, that weird school year. And so he had been, his kindergarten year of school had been cut short, right? Cut in half because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So those little friendships that he had been developing in his kindergarten class had been cut short. And then Sarah got diagnosed. So then our lives were in crisis mode, as you'd call it, you know, with learning how to do this diabetes thing. So I feel like I don't want to say ignored him, because I did not ignore him nor neglect him, but he definitely got pushed to the side, you know, a little bit, mainly in terms of like his friendships. You know, my older son kind of already had his friends and he was a lot more independent and he could go out and play with his friends on the street and whatnot. Meanwhile, I'm here focused on diabetes and this third poor child is, you know, left by the wayside. And so it was last year that I really realized, like, he had friends, but I had really done nothing to, like, invest in those friendships and help to, like, grow them. Because obviously he can't drive a car. He depends on me to take him to friends' houses or to invite friends over. So I made a conscious effort of, okay, this sweet, sweet child, he's the sweetest kid. Like, my goal for 2023, or really I started last school year. So he's in third grade this year. For the 2022-2023 school year, I'm going to invest in his friendships. So I like weirdly stalked. I know that's not a, people have heard me talk about how I weirdly stalk people before on this show, but I basically hunted down the parents of the little kids he was friends with in his class. And I just said, hey, I was perfectly honest. I'm like, hey, this is my third kid. I feel like he's always just been along for the ride. And I'd really like to invest in his friendships this year. Like, I want to focus on him. And so I was like, I really want to do like a park date one day a month, you know, on a weekend. Let's all get together at the park, bring some snacks and some water and let him run around for a few hours. And we've been doing that ever since the start of school. And I feel like it's been so fun to see him grow in those little friendships and for him to know that like mom and dad are making an effort to like invest in me and invest in my interests and my friendships. So, you know, that's just an idea for parents. Maybe if they have a non-T1D sibling who's struggling a little bit with, you know, just kind of being left out a little bit.
Yeah, I like that, Katie. And I think one of the risks and challenges of when type 1 comes to us, and you and I are both kind of, quote, guilty of this, right? We've thrown ourselves into the type 1 world even deeper, right? You run a podcast. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, a program for parents. I work in it professionally. So we're really deep into diabetes. And so how do we signal our non-type 1 kids that they're important and that we care about what's going on for them too? And so I think your park playdate is a wonderful solution to that dilemma. And I don't think we're unique. Like, I don't think just because we're in it in this particular way and you're like, there's a more public forward-facing aspect to it, there are a lot of people who really identify, do the JDRF walks, you know, do fundraising, advocate in ways that are really important for our T1D kids. But the question happens, like, what happens to the kids who that's not as relevant for? Like, do they feel taken up and cared about in the same way? So I think that a park playdate is the perfect solution to that.
Well, thank you. He's been enjoying it. It's been fun. And yeah, it's hard. I mean, honestly, it's just hard to have multiple children, regardless of whether or not diabetes is in the picture. Something that's been hard for me a little bit is that my boys, not so much anymore because it's been 2 years and they've kind of learned, but in the beginning, especially, they wanted to be really helpful. Like, they were like listening out for Sarah's, you know, Dexcom alarms and would come running to me and tell me like, I just heard an alarm, mommy, or would want to bring her a juice box or were very interested in watching a Dexcom change or a pump change. You know, they were they were pretty invested, which is a blessing, right? But Sarah did not appreciate that. Sarah did not want, she likes her privacy, and I can't blame her. And she just didn't want everybody all up in her business all the time. You know, she really, she's for sure an introvert. She likes to have her space. And so, and it's her brothers. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, our family is not free of sibling rivalries and whatnot. They're great kids and they, for the most part, get along, but we're not free of those sibling squabbles for sure. So that was a little bit of an issue for us. Can you speak to that at all? Just, I mean, I had to basically tell my boys, you know, take them aside later after, you know, whatever squabble was over and just be like, hey, I am so grateful that you want to be helpful and you're interested. I think that's so sweet. I said, but I think your sister really just needs her privacy right now. And so the way that you can help me the best is to, you know, just give her some space. Like, I know you want to be helpful to us and you can do that. But the way I need you to be helpful is just to let us have some breathing room and a little bit of privacy.
And was that specifically close to when she was diagnosed and that settled down?
Yeah, I would say it was definitely more happening more around that time. There, we still have moments even now and then where one of them will catch a glimpse of the number on the Dexcom. And, you know, it could go any way, like, oh, great, Sarah's at 100. That's a unicorn, you know, or, oh, my gosh, Sarah's at 300 or, you know, Sarah's 55. I think she needs a juice. You know, Sarah just doesn't like it when people announce her numbers like that, which, again, totally get it. So we still have moments of that where they have the best of intentions. You know, they're either trying to be encouraging or they're trying to, like, be helpful and be like, hey, we might need to do something about this. But she just doesn't want that. So I have to talk to them about, hey, you know, put yourself in her shoes. I say that all the time. How would you feel if you had this thing that you had to deal with all the time and people were just announcing it for all the world to hear? You know what I mean?
So I think how you're handling it sounds just about right. And I can see what the dilemma is. I have a few thoughts here. One is, it's not just that they want to be helpful, most likely. It's also they want, and this is what we've been talking about, they want to be part of the family thing. And the family thing is keeping Sarah safe, right? And being involved with diabetes. So certainly at the beginning, that makes a lot of sense to me. Like, the whole family reoriented itself around this diagnosis. That's just what happens. And so they were wanting to be part of that reorientation. And that makes sense to me. And I think what you're pointing to is validation, right? Validation with a specific request. So you're saying, you know, and a strong validation is going to really meet them where they are. You know, what is it that they're experiencing and kind of what's their pain point, basically? And so the pain point is twofold. They want to help and they feel on the outside, and they're seeing that there's a lot of conversation about what's going on over there with Sarah, right? So they want to be part of that. It's all well-intentioned, as you say, and the ask is reasonable. And, you know, she might have to suffer through a little. The other thing I think about, Katie, in a situation like this is that diabetes camp could be really helpful. So there is a thing that, and I don't know how this is in your family, but, you know, we make assumptions about what our children understand about diabetes because they're living with it, and they might not understand it, our non-T1D kids. So it could be helpful to just explain things to them, like, you know, a 300 can take a while to come down. So it doesn't need to be announced. It's not an urgent moment. I'm on top of it already. That kind of thing. Like, they might not understand a lot of things about it. And there can be some, this is a little to the side of what you're saying, but there can be some magical thinking in young children about, for example, how diabetes got caused or how responsible they are for taking care of it. So that kind of, you want to clarify as much as you can, create as much transparency as you can, because you don't want them to be holding on to feelings of responsibility for things. I'm not hearing that for your kids, but I do think that can happen. You know, young children who don't understand, like, how did their sibling get sick, can make up crazy stories about how it somehow relates to them or how they're somehow responsible for fixing it. And so you want to be careful to, and this isn't a caution to you, this is a sort of general caution, like, you want to be careful to keep everything as transparent as possible, and also don't ask for help that they can't do. I'm not hearing that at all in your family. But, you know, sometimes parents do want help, and age-appropriate help really is just going to be like, grabbing a juice box. Mm-hmm. So how can you fold them in for help and make them feel like an important part of the family, the new family focus, without overwhelming them? Does that make sense? I went a little to the side of what you were talking about.
Yeah, no, that makes really good sense. I was just thinking about how I, like I said, my oldest son is 12 and he's quickly approaching 13, but I did, that's probably 6 months ago or so, I like sat down and explained to him how to use the nasal spray, the glucagon, you know, because there's times where I'll run out to the store without them, or I'll go for a walk around the neighborhood without them. And, you know, they're home for a little bit of time without me because they're getting older. And I did want somebody other than, you know, Will's my husband, Will or I, to know how to use that. And I don't really know. He was very receptive and, you know, his eyes were kind of wide. And I don't really know if that was the right thing to do. But yeah, I know I can definitely see where like asking them to take on too much responsibility would just be incredibly overwhelming. And, you know, could maybe even lead them to think that like they're responsible for taking care of their sibling and managing things when, you know, that's, I'm sure that would probably be no parent's intention. But, you know, they were probably just asking for a little bit of help, or, you know, again, having safety at the forefront of their minds. But yeah, I think we all need to take a step back. And before we ask things of our non-T1D kids, make sure it's appropriate, make sure it's not too much.
It's tricky, though, because like my daughter, who is now 14, last summer, very complicated situation where I was visiting my family, not where I live. And I had actually, there wasn't enough room at my family's house for me to stay. So I had rented a place to stay, but there was enough room for my kids to stay at my parents' house. And so, you know, my middle child ended up saying, no, I've got it. I can take care of her overnight. It's not a problem. You know, she was 18 years old. She's lived with this for a very, you know, since kindergarten. She knows it well. But, you know, there's that balance. Like, am I handing her too much? Does it feel too burdensome to her? It's hard to know sometimes, right? Because they want to do it and they want to help us, but we have to be really attuned to when it's too much, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about worry that a sibling might get diabetes.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I think we had some of that in our family. Yeah. Have you had some parents bring that up to you?
Yeah, actually, very recently, I had a mom come onto my podcast who had a question about whether or not she wanted to put her non-T1D kids into TrialNet. I will name that my daughter. So my son, now almost 24, was diagnosed at 9, and I initially didn't want to do TrialNet. I just felt, you know, so overwhelmed with what I was facing that TrialNet was not on my mind. But then not too long after I entered TrialNet, and within a year, my daughter was running positive for markers. She wasn't the first time. TrialNet used to be run differently. She was the second time, the second year, because they used to do annual blood checks. And then we entered some studies, and within, so, you know, she was diagnosed at 4, and she was 1 when we started TrialNet. So I do think that anxiety is present. I do think families like mine are, we're in a small minority in the population, and there is additional risk, right, to first degree relatives of kids with type 1. So, you know, that includes their cousins, actually, their first cousins, their grandparents, all of those things. All of those people count as first degree relatives. So I think that that's a, I think what's really important there is for the parent to keep that stress away from the child. If the parent is feeling stressed about that, that needs to be something the parent is managing away from the presence of the child, so it doesn't leak out to the kids. There's no reason for the child to even really have that thought unless it gets... So the question is, there's a... So let me separate this. There's a contagion idea that can happen, right? So kids know that. They know that diseases are contagious. My goodness, certainly after COVID, they know that, right? So what I'm thinking about is when my son was diagnosed, we were in an after-school program, and there was someone there from preschool who he was in the after-school program with. And I told that family, like, Benjamin just got diagnosed with diabetes, and the kid stepped back, literally, like took a step backwards, thinking it was contagious. So we need to tell our children, this is not contagious. You are totally safe. And then we need to also take that worry about first degree relatives and increased risk. And we need to manage that someplace else. Like, if it's going to come, it's going to come. And if we want to enter TrialNet, we can say we're just screening for this. We're helping with science, right? Because we are a special family, so we're helping with science. We want to make sure everyone is safe and we want to help with science. So it gets a little bit normalized and it's not a scary thing because we don't want to frighten our children.
Yeah. No, definitely don't want to frighten them. What, I mean, you know, we did TrialNet. Mm-hmm. That was an anxiety-inducing situation, I'm not going to lie. I mean, my kids were like totally freaked out by the process of it all, just having to, you have to give a pretty big blood sample. I mean, it's through a finger prick, but you gotta squeeze a good amount out. They did not enjoy that at all. I did talk to them in a similar way that you described about like, this is helping, you know, this is helping with researchers and science. And, you know, they're studying medicines right now to help prevent diabetes in the future. And this can really help them. So, but you know, my boys flat out asked me if there was a chance that they could have diabetes or get diabetes. And I mean, I'm never going to lie to my children. And so I just said, there is a chance. Like there's a chance for me to get diabetes. Mm-hmm. There is a chance, but you know, there's just no sense in spending a lot of time worrying about that. That's not productive worry, right? That's not going to get you anywhere. That's just going to cloud your thoughts with, you know, emotions and anxieties that aren't productive. I mean, they're certainly valid. I mean, I would say it's normal to have those feelings, but they're, you know, you have to find a way to let them go because it's not going to change the trajectory of your life, you know?
Important there, Katie, is to just keep it practical. Like, I agree with you. You're never going to lie. And if they ask for sure, you're going to tell them that, yeah, there is some increased risk. And you can say, this is the part, actually, you might be not telling a full truth, but you can say something like, I'm not particularly worried about it. We're going to double check. I think that's wise, but we're not going to worry about it. And if we as parents set that tone, it's going to be easier on them, even if we're like faking it till we make it, right? Because as you say, it is stressful to do TrialNet. And a lot of parents are really anxious about whether they even want to know, right? Because what can we do?
Right.
And that can be stressful. I mean, there are things to do. And certainly for my daughter, doing TrialNet was helpful because it allowed her to enter a study. And it meant that she was diagnosed not at the hospital, incredibly early. It was a very easeful entry to diabetes. But it also was more easeful because her brother had it. And so she was used to seeing it all the time. It's just a very different thing for a second diagnosis in a family.
Well, and now there really are things you can do now.
Yeah.
So you know, teplizumab was recently approved by the FDA as a preventative treatment for type 1, you know, to kind of hold it off for as long as possible, a few years or even longer in some cases. But so there really are things you can do now, you know. So, I mean, I would encourage families to get it done if they feel comfortable with it. I mean, I do think it helps researchers in science, just like I said, and there truly are things that can be done now to kind of hold it off as long as possible. So, yeah, I mean, you don't even have to share your results with your kids if you don't want to. I mean, they might ask if they're old enough. My boys asked, and that was awkward too, because I'm like, they were both negative. And so I didn't want to turn that into a celebration, right? in front of Sarah, especially. So I just pulled them aside privately one night when they share a room still. And when I was like tucking them into bed and just, you know, told them, hey guys, we're not going to talk about this with Sarah, but I do want you to know that your test results came back negative, but I just didn't want to, you know, make that into a big celebratory thing around her, because I'm not sure how that would make her feel. So
the other thing about that, Katie, and I don't know, and this might be veering too far from the actual topic of siblings, but I don't know the data on this, but I know that it can change. That's the thing. It's like, it's not a fixed date. You know, the data is negative for now. The data is whatever the data is now, but it can change. So it's like, we still have to be a little watchful. We have that in the back of our minds. And so how do we carry that with as little stress as possible, so we're not overburdening our non-T1D kids with the idea that this could happen, right? That's a delicate line to walk.
Yeah, real quick, another thing about just siblings worrying, like, and maybe you have some good advice on this. I will check my boys every now and then for either ketones or we'll do a finger prick. My oldest son, he asks me, he's like, Mom, I felt really thirsty today. Can you do a finger prick? And I don't freak out. I'm not like, oh my gosh, what do you mean you felt thirsty? Tell me all about it. I'm just like, okay. So we'll do a finger prick and he's been fine every time. So I just kind of let him take the lead in that. But like, you know, we, like my youngest son, who's not really that young, he's getting ready to turn 9. He wet the bed the other night, which he yeah. hasn't done mm-hmm. in ever, which he'll be mortified if he ever knows that I mentioned that on this podcast.
We won't tell him.
But it freaked me out, yeah. of course, as it would for any T1D yep. parent. But I did not say a thing. I said, oh, buddy, thank you for telling me. I'll wash your sheets while you're at school. Let's have breakfast. Have a great day. Yeah. Like in my head, of course, I'm freaking out. But like you said, like I'm choosing to manage that not in front of him because, yeah. and I just, you know, we all know the signs and symptoms. There's no reason to announce to your children that now you're going to be watching them like a hawk and taking note of every single time they go to get a glass of water and, you know, whether or not they look pale or whatever. Just file that into the back of your brain and then just keep an eye on the situation for a little while after that. And he was fine. That was the only incident we had. No other issues. It must have just been a fluke. Again, he's going to be mortified.
Right. Well, I think all of that, I mean, you're talking about two really different kinds of anxieties. With your older kid, he's anxious. He knows the symptoms
yeah.
and he tracks it himself. Mm-hmm. Poor guy. Like that's really hard for him. And I like that you're just practical. Sure. Let's do a finger stick. And because you're practical and because you're reassuring and not churning it up for him, I suspect he'll be able to just keep it right there or let it quiet more. And in other words, mm-hmm. the question becomes, how much does the worry disrupt normal living? Almost not at all for him, mm-hmm. right? He's able to just do the finger stick and move on. With your younger kid, mm-hmm. you're the one holding the worry, right? Not him. He is not tracking signs mm-hmm. and symptoms. And you're saying to yourself something like, let's see if this happens again this week. If it does, then I will check something. I have no idea what you're saying to yourself exactly, but something in there. And you're able to manage mm-hmm. it without escalating it for him, which is good. So I think mm-hmm. worry can come out in lots of ways. And the question is how to manage it so that it's not disrupting anyone's living, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Well, Joanne, I feel like we've kind of hit all the bullet points you and I had talked about before we started recording. But what other thoughts or advice, just nuggets of wisdom, anything else that you have for the listeners for just those non-T1D siblings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I want to talk about really briefly is the crisis, right? When kids mm-hmm. are first diagnosed and there's a crisis and you really can't turn your attention to your non-T1D kids because all of your energy and breath is going towards your T1D kid. And to give yourself mm-hmm. a break, right? Like the non-T1D mm-hmm. kids are suffering. There's no doubt about it in those moments. We can't look at them and focus on them then. I would name that to them, right? I would name to them, mm-hmm. like, I know that I don't have time to fill in the blank, play trains, cuddle with you at night, talk to you. This is a real change. This is not what I want. This is mm-hmm. going to end, right? Even if you don't know that in that moment, you have to kind of trust that what other parents are telling you, what your doctors are telling you, that mm-hmm. this is the worst time and it will end is true. This will end and I'm coming mm-hmm. back. I love you and care about you a lot. And, you know, I'm still here as much as I can be, right? And sort of you're putting something on hold that may need addressing later, right? So for my non-T1D mm-hmm. kid, it took a while. I had a baby and a diagnosis at the same time, not in the same person. And it took like, I don't know, really a few years, I want to say, to really sort it all out and get my middle non-T1D kid back to a really level place. And so I just want to name that can happen so that people aren't freaking out about it. Again, it's not ideal, but, you know, to name it, to notice that it's really hard for them if it is in that moment and that you love them and see it and are doing everything to get back to them is really important.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much for that reassurance. I'm so glad you circled back to that crisis time because that's the hardest part, honestly, you know, let's be honest. I will say it can resurface though. Like, I mean, I was just even just thinking about what day is it? It's Friday. Hold on. Last week we went to my kids had a couple of days off school because of President's Day and we went to a trampoline park and diabetes and trampoline parks don't belong very well. And all my kids were there and my youngest son wanted me to go jump with him and I did, but probably like a few minutes into it, Sarah started like tanking. And so I said, buddy, I'm so sorry. I got to go help Sarah real quick. And, you know, he kind of like threw his head back you know, like was frustrated and annoyed. I said, "Bud, I'll be right back. I promise." And I think we just need to really, it's easy as parents to go handle the diabetes, you know, situation that needs handling right away. And then kind of forget like, oh, wait, I was supposed to go back to my other kid, you know, but really file, like try to make a conscious effort to file those moments of like, no, I like really need to go back to that other kid when I'm done here. And I did. I helped Sarah. And then I went back to him. And by that time, he had moved on to something else. And I said, hey, I'm all done now. Do you want to go back and jump? And he was like, no, but I really want to play air hockey. And so we like bought a ticket to play air hockey. And we did that. And then he ran off with some other friends of his. And I was an afterthought. But I think we just need to, you know, make a conscious effort to circle back when things get interrupted.
Absolutely.
We need to circle back to our other kids.
Yeah. And I think sometimes name, like when he throws back his head, there's a moment there where he's so frustrated and angry at diabetes. And that might not be the moment to name it. But at some point to say, hey, I wonder how you feel about diabetes. One of my favorite stories was a kid, a sibling who said he didn't even want a cell phone because he was so tired of all the alarms and beeps and alerts that his sibling, his type one sibling had, right? Like it impacts them. And so to make room to talk about what the impact is on them also is helpful if they're old enough to be able to express it, which your 8-9-year-old is for sure.
So one other thing I want to say, and you may disagree or agree with this, is, you know, I was thinking about this episode as we were getting prepared to record, and I think something that has helped me a lot with the other non-T1D siblings is just having good diabetes management. And I don't want anybody to hear what I'm not saying, because we are for sure do not have those perfect numbers or those straight lines all the time. But I would say overall, we know what to expect, right? We know how to bolus for food. We've gotten like the nighttime situation for the most part under control, unless, you know, there's an illness or whatever the case may be. And I think we do a pretty good job of managing it well. And I think that has really, really helped us in, as a family, because there's not this added stress of constantly being on the diabetes roller coaster, because everybody's more stressed out when that's the case. When you're not sleeping at night, nobody's happy, you know, especially as the parents, like, you don't have the bandwidth to deal with a whole lot of other things, including your non-T1 kids when you're exhausted. You know, it's kind of the same thing as like having a newborn, like trying to get them on a sleep schedule as soon as possible so you can sleep. And, you know, I would just, and again, we have days that are horrific in terms of diabetes management. So I don't want anybody to hear me wrong. We have bad days and we struggle. I would say overall, we've learned what to expect. We know what to do to get back in range, and we have pretty good management. And I would just encourage anybody who's really struggling, like, please just go get some help. Like, you know, call your diabetes educators, you know, hire a diabetes educator who you can meet with weekly just to get things better under control. I mean, you know, we all know diabetes changes all the time, but I guess just don't settle on throwing your hands up in frustration and saying this is the way it's always going to be. I give up. You know, do what you have to do, you know, to learn how to manage diabetes better, because your whole family will benefit, not just your T1D and not just you and your sanity, but the whole family will.
I actually agree with that. I think though that for some parents, when you say I have, you know, you want to make it as easy as possible for everybody to succeed. Right. That's what's important. And that includes with diabetes, right? Because that could be a pretty big hurdle to success in the family overall. And when you say we have some horrific days, don't get me wrong. What I want to communicate to parents is that's normal. And so some of what you're talking about isn't about getting the numbers under control. It's about getting our anxiety under control. Right. So that diabetes is in the appropriate place. Like even if it's a bad day, to not let it derail. Right? That we don't want all bad days. I agree with you. Work on it so we don't have all bad days. And sometimes it's just really hard. And so the question is, how do we keep our anxiety about really hard days under control so that it's not in the centerpiece?
Great point. Great point. I love that.
Yeah.
All right, my
thank
friend.
You, Katie.
I think we need to wrap it up. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I love being on the show.
Enjoyed our
Thanks,
time.
Katie.
You're welcome. Bye. All right, that's it for the show today. Again, make sure you check out my other episodes with Joanne. That's episode 88. That's called Working Through Anxiety. Episode 89 is called Validation. Episode 90 is called All Those Feelings and Emotions That Come Along with a Type 1 Diagnosis. And episode 91 is called Relationships and the Stressors That Come with a Type 1 Diagnosis, all featuring Joanne. Also, make sure you check out Joanne's website. She is an amazing diabetes coach. She offers some amazing and wonderful courses for parents and caregivers of T1Ds. Her website is diabetessweettalk.com. I will definitely leave a link in the show notes to her website, as well as the episodes that Joanne has been featured on. All right, my friends, enjoy your week. Always remember to stay calm and bolus on. Bye.